archaeologist. You gotta get out of the library!
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Underrated Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss the films that we find underrated, underappreciated, and the ones that have just slipped under the radar and passed everyone by. I am one of your hosts, Derek McDuff, and joining me, as always, are the other hosts, Alan Torres.
Hey everybody, what's going on?
And Ariel Ortiz.
Hello!
And today we're going to be talking about a film that, while it was a box office success, part of a very successful franchise, did pretty good critically, is one of the most reviled films on the internet, to the point where a lot of people like to pretend it doesn't even exist. But we decided to cover it now because the fifth installment in this beloved franchise is about to release. But we are going to today be talking about film number four, and that is, of course, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Everybody knows what this movie is, so I don't really need to explain everything. After many, many years, Last Crusade had been released in 89. In 2008, Crystal Skull was long-awaited. A lot of people thought it would never come out, and the internet had its thoughts on it, which, you know, I might disagree with a little bit, but before we get into that, Alan, why don't we start with you? What did you think about Indiana Jones 4?
I liked it a lot, dude. When it came out, I was shocked at how many people despised it. Like, I remember the day after the day it came out, you know, because this was around the time, like, midnight showings were really big, so people were like, I'm gonna go watch it. And literally over here in California, or over here in SoCal, we have a radio station called K-Rock. And Ralph Garman, who was one of my favorite, you know, personalities there, he's still going on. He has his own podcast and everything with Kevin Smith. He was like, they had a whole segment of calling people in and just berating the film. Like, they were like, oh my God, it's so fucking aliens. What the fuck? Oh my God, the fridge. Oh my God, this. Like, there was, everybody had something to complain about. And I was just like, dude, what the hell? Like, that whole morning was just reviews nonstop of how much it was horrible and how bad it was, da da da. And I still went to go see it that night. And I walked out going, dude, what the fuck? That was great. Like, I had a great time with it. I really liked it a lot. And what kind of, I disagree a lot with the internet says about it. I know they have their whole, I will say, yeah, the fridge thing is a little wild. But I'm like, okay, how is it hard for you to believe that he can survive a fridge? But then there's a fucking knight's, not knight's, a crusader sitting in a fucking room for like thousands of years in one of the movies, and then another movie a guy gets his heart ripped out. And there's Indiana Jones has always had like these really big kind of like, they're almost unbelievable fantastical scenes, but like that's the beauty of them, that's what makes them fun, that they're all, you know, what's the term, you know, that they're kind of slightly supernatural, slightly sci-fi. Oh my God, what's the term? It's that genre,
mythical?
Of like, not mythical,
fantasy?
No, like jumping.
Are you talking about suspension of disbelief type thing?
Yeah, but like the mummy. You know what, like the Brendan Fraser mummy is swashbuckling. It's swashbuckling. And I'm like, swashbuckling is usually pretty like fantastical. Like, you know, they're jumping off cars and jumping into windows and like shooting. Like, it's all really fun. And I felt like that's what this movie delivered. It delivered on all that stuff, and it had like the mythical, the sci-fi, and I couldn't understand why people had such a disbelief about aliens, where I remember around that same time there was like UFO sightings over here in SoCal, and there's like always been UFO sightings, and I'm like, it's the same thing with the paranormal, same thing with supernatural. I'm like, I don't know why these other three films get a pass on a lot of the shit they get away with. But this one, it was like, no, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. Aliens are unbelievable, whatever. Like, and then the Crystal Skulls has always been like a big legend. So I'm like, there, you have the legend of that. Then you have like, just like the same legends in the other films. And I just didn't understand it. I know some people were like, oh, well, Shia LaBeouf, he's going to try and like usurp Harrison Ford and take over the role, but I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think it's just trying to expand on the lore. And I don't know, that there was always something that people had about it that I just was kind of like going, you know what, dude, you got a bad case of nostalgia, mm-hmm. and you are letting your nostalgia just kind of like, it's weird. I feel like nostalgia, it's still going on to this day. People are chasing that dragon. They're like, I want to feel the same way I felt when I watched it as a kid, when I saw Star Wars as a kid, when I saw Indiana Jones as a kid, Jurassic Park, whatever. And I won't lie, it's probably going to happen one day with the Marvel, DC, all these comic book films, that they're going to be like, I liked it when it came out that time. And then new ones are going to come out, and then they're going to bitch about it. I think the biggest thing that hurt this film is the nostalgia factor. And I'm pretty fucking sure this new one that's coming out, Indy 5, where there's already reviews coming out, I think it's going down the same route. We haven't seen it, obviously. It's still not out yet at the time of the recording, but I feel like a lot of it's, again, the nostalgia factor, that chasing the dragon, it's not hitting the same high. But, sorry, I had a lot to say about it. I've been defending this movie ever since it came out because I always liked it a lot. But, yeah, sorry. On to you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I enjoy it very much. It's still not the worst one, which is Temple of Doom is the worst one in my opinion.
Thank you.
So.
Thank you very much. Yes, it is.
But I think the reason why it was so hard for people to accept was the alien of it all. While, like in the other movies, even with Temple of Doom, it was more based in like a mythos, like kind of fantasy, religious kind of tweaking kind of thing. So it was a lot more of a groundedness to it than... They're not really like... That too is like... they're not really like aliens or interdimensional beings, meaning that they're like a different dimension. Mm-hmm. Dimensional being and not aliens themselves. But then they do show an actual outer space alien. So it kind of negates that, even that kind of notion as well. But yeah, like I was rewatching it today with the bro, and you know, he kind of always comes in with like a very not critical, but like an understanding and view and interpretation of the movie, of like where things are, and also like historical things of the original name of this movie was Indiana Jones and the Saucer Man. But Steven Spielberg.
That's a rad name.
That was one of the, yeah. Because it had been kicked around for a while. That was one of the potential ones.
It was on a script, one of the initial scripts by George Lucas.
Yeah.
And he's like, we can't put that name kind of thing. And yeah, like we kind of like ended up boiling it down to like overall the movie isn't really a really good and very true, and going off of that nostalgia factor, very true to the essence of Indiana Jones and adventure itself. There's just a few moments where it like jumps the shark in things. So, and we boiled it down to like three, I think. So we boiled it down to the monkeys, the monkey swinging scene, the aliens themselves, and then yeah, the fridge. Like those were just the three moments that you could kind of like have some kind of clout to arguing about. But even then, like it's just kind of like, okay, you could get over it. Like I was even kind of pitching to my brother, like they didn't need the monkeys. They could have cut the monkeys. He could have fallen into Marion's car, and then he sees like a vine a swing on and like crack and like enter back into the scene that way, kind of thing. But yeah, like it overall, it is really cool. It's a really cool adventure. It like one of the things like that they could have done instead of like going full ham with the aliens themselves, just actually have like a story of El Dorado and kind of base it more in the mythicism, like they have like the original three, and what I'm feeling like they're going to do with Dial of Destiny. It's going to kind of go back to that more mythical kind of element. I know there is like an element of time travel, but even that is kind of like, well, that's based on kind of science and things like that, and also like mythicism. So I think that at least the fifth one, I feel like, has a little bit more of a strong foot to stand on than kind of jumping the shark to, like, a more extra, not even interterrestrial kind of situation. And yeah, but going back to this film, it is such a fun movie. I really do love the dynamic between Harrison Ford and Shia LaBeouf. You know, really do hope that Shia LaBeouf's character and Marion, they get mentioned and like are integrated in some way into the new one, because like I still feel like the character of Mutt Williams or Henry Jones the Third, he has like a really strong foot to carry on the mantle, and it would be really awesome to kind of see that. Yeah, he has an act for archaeology or you know, more so treasure hunting and all this, and I still would love to enjoy, like, you know, a continuation of passing the torch to be like his son, than to like this random new character that potentially is going to be introduced. And yeah, like while Last Crusade is my favorite, and like it, I feel like it has even that kind of elements to it with like William Hurt, Hurt's character kind of like standing, being the kind of like avatar for his father. Who? William,
Sean Connery.
No, I'm talking about.
Oh, it's a. Yeah, yeah.
John Hurt.
Like in that way of like him being like a kind of like a mentor figure to him. Yeah, they did go to school together, but he was probably an older classman to him, and it's like John Hurt's character was like someone to like, you know, look up to for him, and you get that like care that he really does care for him, and so you have that dynamic. Really awesome action scenes, like the both car kind of action moments of like the beginning in the warehouse and then like the rocket car and all that kind of chase was really awesome and really well choreographed, and it's really awesome to kind of see like the waning of ability from Indiana Jones and like, you know, older and things like that. And then like the jungle car fight scene was really awesome to see, you know, and yeah, I mean, the action is actually really good in this movie. Like, mm-hmm. I think it action wise, it is like in the top tier of all these movies so far. I think it might be in action, like the second at least in the action front for an Indiana Jones movie. So yeah, I really feel like it sucks. It's like it's not the nostalgia and that people wanted, or you know, kind of stupidly wanted, but it in its true sense, it does have the true essence of Indiana Jones and his movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that you guys liked it, because I was very nervous to talk about this movie, and it's one that I had actually had slated to talk about since we started this podcast. But I was always just like, people are gonna hate me for defending Indy 4, because people always do. People are always like you guys said, like you had said, you Alan, you've been spending, you know, 15 years, however many years, defending this movie from people on the internet who are just like, oh yeah, it's a trilogy, that other one doesn't exist, blah blah blah. And I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head with the people get wrapped up in their nostalgia, and it's never going to match what they had imagined of their childhood memories. Like if they release Last Crusade today, people will be like, it's not the same as the old ones, you know, because mm-hmm. it's their childhood memories of the thing. And those first three were really fossilized in amber, kind of, because especially for our generation, I was born, I'm the oldest one of us, I was born a couple months after Last Crusade came out. So those were all movies that had existed in the past. Indiana Jones was a complete thing. It was over. There was three movies. They all had kind of existed equally for me. They weren't getting introduced, doled out. And then it's after I'm an adult, I'm 18 years old, I'm a fully formed person, there, and for years and years and years, I'd heard rumors, you know, about, oh, they're writing a new Indy 4. There were so many starts and stops, and a lot of that had to do with Lucas and Spielberg and Ford couldn't all get on the same page, and a lot of that was Lucas trying to make it very much a more, even more of an alien story, like you said, Ariel, with that original, the title that he had written. I can't remember who he, like, I think it was maybe M. Night Shyamalan did a draft that was going to come out in 2002 that might have had that title. There's a lot of weird stuff going on with the script of this, and then when it finally came out, and it was a, you know, because of Ford's age and because of them wanting to go in a little bit of a different direction, and now it was about appropriate for it to be set in the 50s, things were a little bit different, and they're like, it's not the same. They changed it, now it sucks, and the internet can't be okay with things being different, or even things just being kind of okay, because, like I said, I think this is about on par with Temple of Doom for me. I would put a Temple of Doom just above it, but
I don't like Temple of Doom.
Me either. Not me.
That's fine. I like all. That's the thing. I love all these four movies. I think it's all not, four of them are great.
It's not about the story. I just do not like the main girl.
Ridley Scott's annoying as fuck.
But I
still like it. That's the thing. I like all four of them. Those first, or one and three, though, are just in another category. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's some people who like Temple of Doom the best. And, you know, I disagree with them, but, like, that's fine. That's their opinion. But I think that Temple of Doom and this one are the ones that are a little bit different. They're the ones, these not fighting Nazis. It's not a religious, like a religious Judeo-Christian artifact. Not that Judeo-Christian is a thing, but, like, it's this whole, it's, they're kind of a little bit different of a piece. The tone is a little bit, like, it's, two is really cynical, and this one's a little more kind of campy, I guess. I don't know the best way to put it. But I really do like that it is, like, it makes sense for it to be in the 50s because of the time that has passed. And I like the idea that we're going to take this character. He's based on these 30s serials. And so all three of those came out in the 80s. So it made sense for all of them to be set in the 30s. And that character is very reminiscent of those pulp heroes who would punch Nazis and go do the things, and characters like, you know, the Phantom and, you know, the Rocketeer would be another throwback like that we've talked about before. But now that character, you are supplanting those tropes and putting them into a new period. You're, like, combining those tropes that Indy's associated with the tropes from, like, instead of the pulp of the 30s, the B movies of the 50s. Yes. So that means you have to bring in the Soviets. And instead of it being about, like, we're going to get this thing for power, it's like, oh, this, the Cold War is all about spying on people and trying to secretly control everyone. So it's all going to be like, instead of being like a secret, like, oh, we're going to use this, the arc, to, like, shoot laser beams or whatever. It's like, no, we're going to get this to secretly control America and make you think our thoughts. That's such a Cold War thing. And I think Cate Blanchett is great in this. She's, mm-hmm. you know, doing her, like, evil, like, swords one thing. You know, it's a different take on an indie villain. But I think it is honestly probably, other than Belloc from the first one, the best main bad guy in an indie movie. She's phenomenal. And there's a moment that I think is so perfect for showing the transition for what they're trying to do. And I think everyone forgets about it because it's directly after the worst part of the film, right after they nuke the fridge, which is admittedly a dumb scene. Like, it's bad, it's dumb. They stole it from a rejected draft of Back to the Future. But it's the moment when Indy, after he gets out, and he looks up, and you just see this him staring at this atomic bomb. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Indiana Jones is now in the atomic age. He is now fully in this other thing. And I think that was such an amazing visual metaphor. Mm-hmm. It just happened to follow right after a moment that everyone was so mad at, so nobody even noticed it. But I think that the whole movie does a really good job with that. Sometimes it's tough walking the line between the kind of serial pulp, like, we're running from the native inhabitants, combining that with, you know, what the aliens. Like you said, Ariel, maybe they could have done it a little bit differently with El Dorado, but I think overall it works. I don't understand why people were surprised that it's aliens. This movie was telegraphing that it's aliens the whole time. Mm-hmm. It starts with an alien from Roswell, Crystal Skulls. They're talking about how they're aliens. They're like, it's very clear that it's going to end with aliens / interdimensional beings. And it's so 50s that it makes a ton of sense that I was not taken out of it. And when people tell me, oh, well, if that's what it just, like you, Alan, it just makes me really mad. And then, you know, just the one other thing I wanted to touch on real fast too is, Ariel, you said you kind of liked that they might be passing the torch to Shia. I kind of like that they don't, that they give you a little tease.
I like that too. Yeah. I like the idea that it could happen. That's the thing that I like.
The tease.
I like that they tease.
Because he even says, like, not yet, Junior.
Well, that's what I was about to say. He doesn't say anything. He just, because it gives you that movie moment where you're like, the wind blows in and he's about to put it on. And the John Williams score, it's like, by the way, John Williams, this is a credible, like, the John Williams magic is so much here in this movie too. But he's about to put it on. And I remember in the theater being like, no, they better not fucking do it. They better not fucking do it. And then he snatches it back from, and I was like, good. He's still indie. Nobody else is indie. He's going to be indie. Shia's not going to be indie. Chris Pratt's not going to be indie. Like, nobody gets to be indie except for Indiana Jones. Maybe Short Round. I'll give it to him. But, like, I like that they're like, there is no passing of the torch here. This guy is Indiana Jones. And I really thought that was a great moment to end it on. I thought it was a great thing to end it, to bring back Marion from the first one, to instead of doing the thing where it's like, oh, here's another love interest. Like, no, we're going to go. Yeah. It is true love.
Yeah.
Marion Ravenwood. Mm-hmm. By the way, so glad to see her back. She's phenomenal in this. And also, I gotta say, people are really hard on Shia LaBeouf in this movie. I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think he was really good.
Especially, I think he's phenomenal.
Capturing that essence of, like, greaser, you know, like, mm-hmm. the greaser, you kind of thing that he, I think it, he really played it off to that greaser angst as well. And, like, kind of like being that representation of that era. And then also, yeah, that kind of era. And the kind of, like, if Indiana Jones was his age in that time, like, Indiana Jones would definitely have been a greaser, because he's kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, like, that whole, like, I'm my own man, and, like, I have something to prove, and like, I'm not... I like, greasers were very much more, like, except for Greece, they were more scholarly, and they, you know, they were kind of, they're just like the outsiders and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, and it's great, you know, because he, just like him, he doesn't use his same name of Henry. He uses a name that he invented for mm-hmm. himself that is a dog-related name, which is mm-hmm. a nice little thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, nice little Easter eggs in this. Like, there's a picture of Willie Scott in here. There's a lot of, like, references to Marcus Brody and his dad, of course. There's, of course, the Ark, which is the great Easter egg. But yeah, Shia's great in this. I think Ray Winstone gets a pass in this, because I think that Mac is the worst character in any Indiana Jones movie. Worse than Willie Scott, in my opinion. Like, he's just like, ah, well, it's a triple H. No, triple H is a capital. Like, I really don't like
that
him.
Yeah, that guy was pretty annoying.
Well, the thing is that they didn't catch on. Like, he's like, oh, okay. Like, he pulls, like, I'm CIA and stuff like that, but he's still talking. That was the one thing I was like, you guys, like, he's literally saying his true feelings. He keeps on talking about money. And it's like, if he was CIA, actually CIA, he wouldn't be talking about money still, you know?
He's just a really, really annoying character that I don't like, and I don't, no offense to Ray Winston. He's great in The Departed, he's great in other stuff, but he's really bad in this. Mm-hmm. But just going back to that Shia performance, I think that the dynamic that he has, the whole father-son thing, is so brilliant and so great, because it plays on the dynamic from the last film. You know, you have Indy meeting his estranged father and them learning to kind of coexist, and Indy's whole search for the cup, you know, the search for the divine mirrors his search for love of his own dad, and it's so good. This one inverts that, makes him now the father to an estranged son, which I think is really smart. Doesn't quite pull it off as well as that first or as that third movie, but you were never going to, because that's just the perfect dynamic between the two of them. And I think that, yeah, they really have good chemistry as father and son. So really all around, huge fan of this movie. And even going, because I rewatched all four of them, like almost back to back, it feels of a piece. They all feel like they're one thing. It doesn't feel like there's three and there's one. It feels like these are all Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I don't think that they're going to retcon. I think this movie is still canon.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't want to, like, there's, like, hints of, like, the, on IMDb that it's still canon. I'll just leave it at that.
It's definitely going to be canon. Yeah.
I feel like that'd be such a
cop-out kind of
pussy move, to be honest, to be like, oh, well, they didn't like it. Nah, man, come on.
Yeah, like, cause like, I know the trailers like show like, oh, he's alone and stuff, but it's like, Marion and yeah, like Mutt, they're their own people. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Marion and Mutt are just like off, you know, like adventuring and stuff like that. And Indy's just like, I'm too tired. You guys go on, you know, go adventure with your mom. I'm too tired. Like, I'm staying home and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Mutt isn't going to be in the fifth one wherever Sala was in this one.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you said it, you pretty much said it really well, Derek, with the whole like going into the 50s, and I feel like Spielberg and Lucas have always been very big fans. I mean, as most directors, like now at their age, they were very big fans of the films that they saw growing up. Mm-hmm. A lot of swashbuckling films, like pulp films, and then the B science fiction films of the 50s. So it was a great evolution. And I think they also just really liked the 50s a lot. I feel like they have their own nostalgia for it with
American Graffiti.
There you go, American Graffiti. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like
I saw The Fablemans, so I can tell you Spielberg definitely has some nostalgia for that time period.
There you go, exactly. And I think like he did a great job with it, and I really dug it. I it was really nice because, again, yeah, you know, I think people just like the era before with like the Nazis and everything and kicking Nazis' asses, and I'm like, that's cool, of course, you know. But I felt like Indy peaked when he got his book signed by Hitler at that point. Yeah. Where I was like, okay, you can't really do anything else in that era anymore, let's, you know, kind of move on. And now I feel like I shouldn't say peak, it should be feats kind of thing, where he survived the nuclear bomb, and he, like you said, he sees the big old mushroom cloud, and he meets aliens, and what I love the most is that the ship is a flying saucer that makes perfect sense for the B movie type of genre they're trying to get. And also too, one of my favorite scenes in just films in general is the greaser versus jock scene.
Yeah.
That's the fucking shit, man. Like, I remember, like, I just almost jumped out of my seat. You know, I was kind of a greaser a little bit in high school. Not like super, but like, you know, I did my hair and I listened to like Stray Cats and rockabilly and stuff. So I was like, oh man, this is fucking rad. This is super cool. And then it just perfectly captured that moment where I was like, how do you not like this, man? This shit is so fun. And yeah, man, it's one of those things.
It's so that whole moment is so awesome because it's like the greasers, like it's so awesome that the greasers like instinctively know like one of their own is in trouble. Like, yes. he doesn't even touch the ground. Like, the greasers grab him, and it's so awesome of a scene. And like, yeah, like the classic like switchblades get popped off and stuff like that. Yeah. And then that was an awesome scene, and such a Jones kind of trait of when Cate Blanchett has like, you know, the sword at Mutt's throat, and he's like, wait, and he grabs his comb and combs his hair. It's like both such a greaser move, and then as well as like a son of Indiana Jones would do, like give me a second kind of thing.
Yeah, I also wanted to just kind of touch on that. I feels like this is kind of the end of an era for Spielberg. And I think that this is a lot of people, like, the reason this got delayed so long is because Spielberg and Lucas and Ford, like I said, could not all get in alignment. And I think that really Spielberg has really changed as a filmmaker. He's a lot, in the 80s, he was a lot more of a kind of, you know, he would do like Indiana Joneses and stuff like that, leading into, you know, Jurassic Parks and Jaws like that. And he would still do his serious films. But it feels like over the years, now he's much more interested in being like the prestige, like the Fablemans, like this Spielberg, the Munich Spielberg. And he's gotten less and less interested in the kind of being the pop Spielberg, to the point where I feel like a couple of his more recent pop movies haven't really hit the same way that his old, like the classic Spielberg was. And it felt like this was kind of his last hurrah of doing a real old school Spielberg movie, to a point where I'm like, I'm very glad that the new one is going to be done by James Mangold, because he does still have, you know, after seeing like Logan and 310 to Yuma and a lot of the great films that he's done, I feel like he does still have those kind of old sensibilities. And think that might be why the things that don't work quite as well in this movie might be because Spielberg's kind of getting a little less interested in it, but he still clearly really cares for the character. And it felt like, I don't think he knew, he was like, this might be my last indie, so I'm going to really put a lot of my love into it. And it felt like kind of Spielberg's love letter to not just Indiana Jones, but to this whole style of movies that he would make. I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys.
No, yeah, it does, yeah. And going on to like Indy 5, I feel confident about like the direction, how it's going to look. And especially seeing like, you know, clips that I think like the style is going to look good. I'm very thankful that like the deep fake to make Harrison Ford look younger looks really good. I think they got probably the same guy that they did for Star Wars, who's like actually gotten even better than he was in Mandalorian for Luke. So I'm very happy for that. Like, they won't be any, hopefully no visual hiccups like that. And I think James Mangold is gonna do pretty good. It's just like the story and writing that you know, it's like I'm hopeful and just hesitant kind of thing. But yeah,
cautiously optimistic is how I would put it.
Yeah,
I'm in the same. I wish it would be Spielberg, but at the same time, it's kind of like you guys were saying, like, he kind of, you know, I like Ready Player One, but it does kind of get old. Like, I love the book, and I really liked the movie when it came out, but it does kind of, like, you kind of get over it kind of fast, because that's, like, I feel like that's the last big poppy one he's done lately. And like, yeah, I would like him to do it, but I don't think it would have the same punch like Indy 4 or the older ones. But yeah, I think I'm also cautiously optimistic as well. Like, I'm glad it's another director, because at least I could put the blame on him. But I hope it's good. I don't want to, you know, talk down on it. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic as well.
Yeah, you never want to see a director come back to a franchise because he feels like he's obligated and he's just is worried that someone else is going to do it. I think that was one of the problems of the Hobbit trilogy, is that they needed somebody quick after they couldn't get Del Toro anymore. Like, I wish I could have seen Del Toro's Hobbit. But, you know, that's why Peter Jackson came back so fast. And it's clear that his heart wasn't in it. And I think that Spielberg's heart probably wouldn't be in Indy 5. So I don't want him to do it. It feels like obligated. I want somebody who really cares about Indiana Jones to come and do it. And I think that he does. And since we're talking about like love letters, this is going to be John Williams' last film, is Indy 5. And fuck, like, I can't, like, that is the man who scored my childhood, my entire life. Like there's so many endless iconic themes that this guy has done. And it's just a perfect movie for him to be like, this is it. This is the last one. This is the series that he's been doing since the early 80s. And for him, Williams is 91 now, I think. And just be like, yep. Like, he's been scoring. Like, he was been doing films since, like, he was, like, working on, like, Sunset Boulevard as, like, a studio musician. This guy he's an icon. So I'm just, so, you know, last year I got to see every year at the Hollywood Bowl they do, like, a John Williams tribute, and I got to see him conduct a bunch of these iconic scores live. And one of the ones he did was, he's like, well, you haven't heard this yet, but Jim told me, go play it for the people at the bowl. So here's the new theme from Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character in Indy 5. And it was like, oh my God. And we got to hear it, and it just made me so freaking excited for this. And, you know, this is his last ride. This is obviously going to be Harrison Ford's last ride. It just seems like this could really be a really great send off to this series and this character.
Yeah, I got lucky to see it at Celebration, Star Wars Celebration. He performed like the opening theme of the movie, as well as that additional the Phoebe Bridger kind of theme as well. And it's John Williams. It's such a great score already. It sounds like. And it definitely, like, he's always capturing, and going off of, like, Spielberg's heart might not be in it, but John Williams' heart is, like, just always in the things he writes, and he always, like, loves when he gets to, like, return to characters or return to franchises. He just, like, skips back in and stuff, like, it's, like, there was no time has passed, and yeah, it's gonna definitely feel like that, at least from the score point of view, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, to bounce off of that, how can I ask this? Is there another franchise that you guys really love where it would be kind of a similar situation where somebody would come in to do like a legacy sequel, I guess? Like, 'cause this is essentially a big old sequel. Would you want the original director to come back, or would you prefer it? And which franchise would it be?
It would depend. Like, I think, like, going off of what you know, we've been saying, if the director's heart is truly into it, then yes, for sure. But I think that we've been seeing, and I was kind of having this conversation with the bro also, because we were talking about, like, he had brought up, while we were watching, he brought up, like, the very forgettable, like, Tomb Raider movie that had recently come out, not the Angelina Jolie ones. But that, and going off of that, it takes people who are big fans and have passion for this. And that's why, like, projects like The Last of Us was the example that I used for him, work so well, because, like, Craig Mason is such a passionate person for The Last of Us that he just, like, embodied that story and, like, took it as his own, and he's like, no, I know what to do with this, and I'm gonna, like, adapt this as a fan would adapt it to. And so I think that it very much takes that passion, and that is, like, we were continuing with that conversation that we had. It's like kind of like what the lull is happening in certain, like, franchises and things like that, and that's why the heart is kind of, like, not there anymore, and it's like they need to find that respark to it. So I very much feel like for a legacy legacy, you know, sequel to work, it has to be with passion, and the writer, go down to the writers, to the directors, to almost everybody on set, like, that passion feeds through the screen.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's an interesting question, and I think that a lot of the films, I think this is probably my favorite film franchise of all time, if I'm being completely honest. Like, there's nothing else that is in the same ballpark as indie for me, but even the ones that would maybe come close, they've already done legacy sequels to, you know, your Jurassic Parks, but I think it's a good idea to get some fresh blood in it. And that's why I think Blade Runner 2049 did so well. You get somebody like Denis Villeneuve, who is a brilliant filmmaker, and you get to see his take on what would be this world. And that's, you know, something else. That's a movie, like, starring Harrison Ford this years later. You know, I know that there's been some talk about it, it goes back and forth about The Rocketeer possibly getting a legacy sequel. There's hasn't been any word on that since, I think, about the pandemic, so not sure where the state of that is. I would love Joe Johnston to come back, because I think he still is a filmmaker that is interested in that stuff. But another one that I was thinking of is, it's a movie that came out the same year as Indy 4, and I think that once 15 years has passed, that qualifies as legacy sequel territory. I would love to see a Speed Racer sequel. I would love it, and I would love the Wachowskis to come back. I would love, because they are still, just the way they did their legacy sequel for The Matrix, which didn't completely work for me, but I liked what they were trying to do. They clearly still had the passion in what they were doing. They still really wanted to tell this story. So I don't, maybe somebody else, but I do love the Wachowskis so much that would be cool to see another Speed Racer movie, because that's an all-time great movie for me. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Alan, how about you?
Oh man, I don't know. I kind of had a hard time even answering my own question. Because I feel like there's already, like you guys were saying, there's already legacy sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
there's, like, already a Mad Max, you know, Mad Max, stuff like that. You know, then George Miller came back, he still had it, so.
Yeah, because he had the passion. He had, exactly, that was, yep. like he still felt, I think that's where it comes down to. It's like he still felt like that was his baby, you know, kind of thing. Whereas, like, I think that Spielberg was like, is now, yeah, he's like, it's not my story anymore. Like, he's disconnected from it. Whereas George Miller is like, no, man, Mad Max is my life kind of thing. Like, he just loves it so much, yeah.
Sorry to cut you off, Alan.
Oh, no, you're good. You guys are good. There's already, I guess, you kind of answered mine a little bit, because, like, Scream 5 and Scream 6. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Scream 4 was kind of a legacy sequel, and I wouldn't say it because it was like maybe like 10 years out, maybe 10, 11 years, and Wes Craven was still there. But then Scream 5 and 6 came out way later, and they do have, you know, fresh blood on it, and they've been doing pretty well with them, so I can't really complain too much. I think Radio Silence is doing them. God, I had another one, and I just spaced out.
Oh, there's one I thought, but while it's had sequels, sorry to cut you off, Alan. Mm-mm. Sorry. It'll give you some time to think. But one that, like, I was reading, like, oh yeah, that would sound like a really cool sequel, is Home Alone. Essentially, mm-hmm. There was one internet fan pitch that it isn't Kevin that's like Home Alone, it's actually his mom is Home Alone, like recently widowed mom is like Home Alone. It's like the roles are reversed, like Kevin is trying to get back to his mom, and so and yeah, like having what's her name from Schitt's Creek and the mom,
Catherine O'Hara,
Catherine O'Hara in that kind of role, like it would be really awesome to kind of like pull that off. So that's one legacy thing that I actually like, oh, I would really like that, and I like that idea. So yeah.
I think maybe it really needs it, because every other horror icon has been getting theirs as of late, and it would be Nightmare on Elm Street. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Wes Craven, and it kind of goes back to Scream as well. He can't do them anymore, but I think a fresh blood would be able to do a pretty good job. I feel like that series still has a lot. I mean, they went the meta route at one point with New Nightmare, and I know Robert Englund just recently said he's like, I can't do it anymore, I wouldn't be able to play Freddy, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be a reboot, because that one was not good, or the remake wasn't good, but at least continuing the story somehow down the line, mm-hmm. what would be pretty interesting. I mean, yeah, like I said, there's already so many franchises that are getting them, it's kind of hard to pick one, but what's one that you're like, no, please, no more. Or I don't want one at all.
Back to the Future. Now for making another Back to the Future.
I think that's the key one. I think that's the key one that everyone agrees on.
Yeah, that's one. Mm-hmm. And I think probably they wouldn't be able to even make one we've died anyways. So.
Yeah. It's like famously, like, he has the rights. Like, it's not until he dies that they can make Back to the Future. Yeah.
And I think it's like after that person dies, you have to wait like 72 to 100 years or something like that.
Yeah.
That's why, like, sorry, go ahead. I think if you had.
Well, I was just going to say, like, that was going to lead me to something else, but go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I think, like Disney recently, is the whole thing with Mickey Mouse, mm-hmm. or in a public domain, and then like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Disney's great at like finagling public domain.
I think there was a whole thing with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle with like Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. where I think now everyone can use all the characters or something like that. I think for a while he was public domain, but there was something where they couldn't use everything. Now you can use whatever you want in a way. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Well, what I was just going to say is, talking about Back to the Future and why we're so like, oh, no more, is because that's a complete trilogy. It's a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it ends so much like the future is what you make it. You're like, it ends very definitively, but still very open-ended for the characters, where it's like the whole ending is like you can do whatever you want. And like, that's a story. It's done. There's no more. And that's the reason why I'm just... kind of bugs me that people are like, oh, this is like a trilogy, is because the indie movies aren't like that at all. The indie movies are solo adventures. He just goes on a thing and he does a thing, and he does grow as a kid. Like, you can track his growth from Temple of Doom, which is the first movie chronologically, where he is a real piece of shit, all the way up until 4, where he's like really grown a lot as a character. So his character still grows, but each of those are individual stories. And it's never like, it's not like, oh, like, let's just make a new Lord of the Rings that's set after Return of the King or something like that, you'd be like, what is this nonsense? But the reason that Indy 4 works and why Indy 5 can work is because these are just individual stories. Nothing about the previous ones was damaged by this one existing. No matter, even if you didn't like the movie, which I know a lot of people didn't, it doesn't take away from those first three. Those first three are still great, perfect adventures. Indy still rides into the sunset at the end of three. It doesn't diminish them in any way because his story is still going. There's not a endpoint like there is in Back to the Future or Lord of the Rings or all of these other stories. You can keep telling Indy stories. That might change with 5. I feel like 5 is going to be kind of a definitive end. But 4 did not take anything away from the end of Last Crusade at all. And that's something I've really thought about a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that he's gonna die in the fifth one. Like they killed Harrison Ford already in a beloved franchise. I don't think they'll kill him off. Yeah. I think it will be just like another ride into the sunset, but it'll feel like okay, he's officially announcing I'm retiring and stuff like that, and then you know Mutt shows up on the scene and like doesn't take the hat, but he's just like, hey, you know, like he applies for because Indiana Jones is retiring, he applies to the college. That's how you do it.
Well, I mean, I would be surprised if Mutt came back just given Shia, you know, and how kind of problematic he is. I would, you know, what I would love to see, I want to see that, but maybe with Short Round. Bring Short Round back into the fold. You know, let Short Round be like the one to carry the new indie, but kind of like continue on the legacy, I guess.
Like a spinoff.
I would honestly watch a Short Round Disney Plus show. Like I would watch the shit out of that.
Mm-hmm. I think if Kiku Kwan came back like 2 years before he did, and like if Everything Everywhere All at Once didn't like happen 2 years earlier, like he would definitely have been included in this fifth movie.
I know there's time for reshoots between, there's been about a year since that took hold and when this one came out, so you never know. I think that maybe I don't know what we're
gonna, I don't mean, know because they didn't, they hadn't seen each other, they barely, the first time that they saw each other was at D23.
I'm just saying there's time for reshoots since like then. There's lots of time for reshoots on these movies, so you never know. And you know, it might be a pipe dream, but that would be really cool. But yeah, I don't know. Any last thoughts on Indy 4 or just Indiana Jones?
Go check it out. It's a great film. Fucking don't listen to the internet, because usually they're wrong a lot. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, like, and then if you were one that like, oh, I didn't like it when it first came out, give it a rewatch, you know? Mm-hmm. Just take it in with like your more matured eyes.
Yeah, take off the nostalgia goggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, the one thing I'll say, just you know, watching these things as I did, just all in a marathon, he does grow so much. Like from that starting point in Temple of Doom, when he's all about fortune and glory, to one of his last lines in this one being about how knowledge is their treasure, how completely it's really a cool character arc to watch back to front. So I recommend doing a marathon to anybody before you go see the new one, because it's a rewarding experience. But yeah, thank you guys for letting me I feel like a weight has been lifted off my chest that I can finally go on the internet and say, guess what? You guys are fucking wrong. Indy 4 is great. I'm really glad you guys are on the same side as me and back me up with this, because it's I can breathe again after 15 years of just like loving this movie. But thank you everybody for listening. Check out all of our other stuff. We do a number of other podcasts. We have our Patreon. Check us out, Undercast Company, on all the socials. Ariel, you have your podcast. Want to mention that to the kind people?
Yeah, I have a podcast you've never seen that comes out at the beginning of each month. And so, yeah, go and check out those ones as they come out.
Yep. And then, you know, like I said, we've got our Patreon exclusive podcast. So if you do sign up to be a patron, you can get that podcast. And if you sign up at our highest tier, you can actually, after being a patron at that level for 6 months, suggest us a movie to cover on this show, and we'll do it. And in fact, next episode, we are going to be covering our first patron suggested episode, our first patron to stay at that highest tier for 6 months has suggested to us Jackie Brown, so I'm very excited to talk about that one. If you too would like to suggest a movie for, or to, we will be required to talk about it after 6 months, to talk about, you can sign up for that highest tier. It's just $5 a month, and we will discuss it. So looking forward to doing some more of those in the future. Definitely check out my other show, Can I Say Something, that I do with my friend Damien. And I just want to shout out a couple podcasts that I've guested on recently. They also did a episode recently on on Crystal Skull, the Matt and Mark movie show. But the episode right before that, I was on talking about Across the Spider-Verse. Had a lot of fun doing that. Always love being on that show. We've all been on in the past. And then check me out on, it was a little while ago now, but because we're recording this on the future, but check out my appearance on Japan on Film, where I got to talk about Kagomishu, the Japanese film from Akira Kurosawa, that I had a lot of fun checking out. But yeah, that about does it for us. And until next time, guys, keep looking for that fortune and glory.
Bye. Thanks for being amazing.
Take it easy, everybody.